Spring arrived at Oregon State University's and the students promptly left. This is spring break week for the state campuses, and the break comes at a moment of concern over health at the University of Oregon in Eugene. Six cases of meningococcal disease have been diagnosed at the U of O, and that includes one fatal case. They've all occurred since the middle of January. Public health workers from the state and Lane County are working together on this, and they're urging students to get vaccines against the disease. Dr. Paul Cieslak is with the Oregon Health Authority. He's the medical director in infectious diseases and immunization programs and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Dr. Cieslak, welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning.
So what? First of all, what is meningococcal disease, and how does it differ from meningitis? Because that seems like the term we've heard more often over the years.
Well, the meningococcus is a bacterium, so it's not a virus, and it can cause bloodstream infection, but it can also cause meningitis, and obviously that's how it got its name, right, meningococcus from causing meningitis. So probably the most frequent manifestation that we see is meningitis, but often it just causes a bloodstream infection. Both are very, very nasty and essentially 100% fatal without prompt antibiotics.
And in meningitis per se, there's just an inflammation of the lining of the brain and the spinal cord?
Precisely. The bacterium gets into that fluid, into your spinal fluid, and it causes a lot of brain inflammation, which gives you the symptoms of headache and stiff neck. But because it's in the central nervous system, it can kill quickly.
So fatal if untreated. And where do we know where it comes from?
Well, it's harbored in the nose and throats of, maybe up to 10% of human beings. So obviously only a tiny minority of people who acquire the organism in their nose and throat go on to have the organism invade into their bloodstream and into the central nervous system. It's hard to predict which people those are going to be. We know some risk factors for it, but a lot of times it appears to be just out of the blue.
Do we know why it migrates?
Well, we think it has to do with breaking down of the normal mucous membrane barriers. We know that smoking can make it more likely to invade. It probably has something to do with drying out of the protective mucous membrane. And certain immunocompromising diseases also put you at higher risk.
Okay, you mentioned smokers. I wonder if there are any other particular risk factors that might be attached. If you do X, you are more likely to end up with a meningococcal disease infection.
Other things that you do are hard to pinpoint. We know that having a cold beforehand may disrupt the mucous membrane barrier. Maybe being exposed to really dry heat all the time, if you're indoors and you got a lot of wood-burning smoke around or something like that, may make you more likely. But in general, it's a question of how likely are you to be exposed? Have you been in crowded areas, and what's your immune system like?
All right. And what do we know about the outbreak at the University of Oregon? It's been there since mid-January, is that right?
Yes. Well, a little background, first of all. The meningococcus comes in several flavors called serogroups, and there has been a vaccine that will protect against four of the serogroups. Now, only three serogroups are really common in the United States, and those are B and C and Y. And the three of those each cause about a third of cases of meningococcal disease. The disease has been getting more and more rare in the United States for reasons that we don't quite understand. But last year in the state of Oregon, for the whole year, for the whole state, we only had four cases of serogroup B meningococcal disease. And since mid-January, we now have six just among University of Oregon undergrads. So that's way more than we would have expected. This is what we would call an outbreak.
All right, so way outside the normal boundaries of what you'd expect to happen in a place and at a time.
Exactly.
Paul Cieslak is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Medical Director of Infectious Disease and Immunization Programs at the Oregon Health Authority. We're talking about the outbreak of meningococcal disease cases at the University of Oregon, six cases in all since the middle of January. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with your questions or comments, 800-838-3760 throughout the listening area, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So it is just, is it B you said that, I'm sorry, B, C, and Y are the common ones, but is it B that's involved at the University of Oregon?
It is. And up until recently, there hasn't been a vaccine against B, but in October and in January, respectively, two new vaccines were just licensed against serogroup B by the FDA.
And what is the difference between the varieties? Anything in the manifestation of symptoms or anything else?
No, not that we really know of. B tends not to have been causing so many epidemics. Usually when you see an outbreak, it's C. But there have been a few on college campuses. You may be aware that in 2013 there was an outbreak at Princeton and another one at UC Santa Barbara, and now we have one at U of O.
Is it just the proximity of people tightly confined in one place, dorm students, things like that?
Well, it's a good question. We think that does have something to do with it. I think it's not only crowding of people, but crowding of people who are coming from different places. You know, if you're hanging around with the people that you've been hanging around with, then you're not likely to acquire a lot of new organisms. But if you're suddenly put at close quarters with a bunch of people that you haven't been around, each of you is bringing his own, you know, bacteria into the mix, and there's a lot more swapping. In addition, the freshmen and sophomores and students in general are probably under significant stress, and we know that stress does weaken the immune system. Another group that we see tends to get outbreaks of meningococcal disease is military recruits in base camp. So once again, you're taking a lot of people from different parts of the country, crowding them together and putting them under a lot of stress, and that seems to be a recipe for outbreaks.
So how often are there outbreaks? I mean, you mentioned Princeton 2 years ago and then the University of Oregon this year. I mean, is it something that seems to pop up just on a regular basis, maybe a few times a decade?
Yeah, probably a little bit more than that nationally. In the state of Oregon, the only other outbreak that I can think of in my 20 years here where we actually took the step of doing a vaccination campaign was in Prineville a few years ago, where we had several cases in that relatively small population of, I think, 9,000 people. And so we undertook to vaccinate people who lived and worked in Prineville. But that's the only other time in the state of Oregon. If you pay attention real closely, you'll see little clusters popping up across the United States where they undertake that. But for a population the size of Oregon, not very often.
And in the Prineville case, we talk about people coming from different parts of the country and being held in close quarters and stress. Was there anything like that set of circumstances?
No. That was just it just seemed to be a community cluster of several cases. Another thing to note is that we think you're more likely to get infection shortly after exposure. And if you don't acquire it within, you know, a week or two of encountering the bacterium, then you're probably not going to acquire it. And so when we get a case in a household, we infer that the bacterium is new to that household. And we know statistically that people in the household are also at very high risk for a short period of time. So we give them antibiotics. We give antibiotics to close contacts to prevent them from getting the invasive disease. We undertake a vaccination campaign when we're seeing clusters of cases that seem to have escaped that ring of antibiotic prevention. And that's what went on in Prineville, and that's what's going on at the University of Oregon.
So, Dr. Cieslak, is there a matter of timing for antibiotics, how soon after exposure versus when they would get the vaccine?
You really need to have the immunity at the time of exposure, because it probably takes 2 weeks for you to mount an effective immune response to a vaccine, and the bacterium can invade much more quickly than that. So you really need to have the antibodies on board when you encounter the organism.
So given that you said about 10% of the population has the bacterium already in their nose and throat, does that mean the body has a certain level of familiarity with it, or because it's not in the bloodstream, it really doesn't have antibodies sort of in reserve?
No, I think it means the body does get exposed to it and does mount some sort of immune response, and those people are basically never going to get the infection if they've encountered it and have been walking around with it for, say, a month. They're not going to have any problem. But there's obviously a lot of people like that out there. We don't know who they are, and they can transmit it to other people. We sort of infer that the organism has probably spread significantly through the University of Oregon population. And as far as we can tell, you know, anybody who's an undergraduate at the University of Oregon is at risk until they get the vaccine.
Dr. Paul Cieslak, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange with the Oregon Health Authority. He's the Medical Director of Infectious Diseases and Immunization Programs. We're talking about the meningococcal disease outbreak at the University of Oregon. 6 cases since the middle of January, 1 fatal. 800-838-3760 if you'd like to participate in the discussion. Join us by email at jx@jeffnet.org. Given that there are the 4 serial groups, if you've built up a resistance to type A, for example, are you in pretty good shape to fight off B, C, and Y, or is there no particular crossover like that?
No, there's probably no significant crossover immunity there. The immunity is based on antibodies directed against their capsules. In the case of ACYW135, and against proteins in the outer membrane of the bacterium for serogroup B. And we doubt that there's any cross-protective immunity.
So how is it often spread? I mean, how does it go from person to person?
Well, it's not, you know, highly contagious in the sense that, say, measles is. It's not an airborne disease. It's spread by what we call droplet spread, which means it's in the nose and throat. It's not coming up from deep down into the lungs and being forcefully expelled by coughing, you know, into the air, and breathing the air might give it to you. It's not that. It's in these heavy droplet particles. If you sneeze and you sneeze directly on someone, you could certainly give it to them that way. But if you're standing 10 feet away from the sneezer, those droplets are heavy and they're going to fall to the ground and they're not going to have any effect on you. So you really have to be close enough to somebody to get spritzed, if you get my meaning, or you know, sharing eating utensils or kissing or something like that.
All right, so some pretty close swapping of body fluids is going to
exactly. Yes.
So, what is the vaccine course like? I mean, how many shots are involved?
Well, there are two vaccines out there. Now, the one that has mostly been used at the University of Oregon is the one that was licensed first in the United States. It's called Trumenba. It's a three-dose series given at time zero, that is, you know, now, and then 2 months later, and a third dose 6 months after the first dose. So 0, 2, and 6 months. The other one, Bexsero, which was licensed in January, is a two-dose series that's just given at time zero and 1 month later.
All right. So, and either one is equally effective, do you think?
You know, as far as we know, the effectiveness is inferred. The disease is not common enough that we can actually, you know, count up the cases among people who have been vaccinated and people who haven't, and draw some conclusions about how well it worked. But what the FDA licensed it on was based on its ability to stimulate antibody responses. And we have some idea about what level of antibody you need in order to be protected against the disease. And basically, you know, around 80% of people are going to have protective levels of antibodies after the first dose, and essentially 100% after more doses.
So what's the basic recommendation you're making about what University of Oregon students should be doing as far as the vaccine goes?
Well, first of all, you know, get the shot. So you need dose one before you can get dose two. But we don't know how long the organism's going to hang around campus, and we think it could be a considerable length of time. And so, therefore, we're interested in getting them protected, not for a few weeks. You know, your antibody titers do wane over weeks and months. We want to protect them for months and maybe even, you know, a year. Protecting them for a few weeks isn't going to do the trick.
And are the vaccines widely available? So if students have already gone home for spring break, they can find them in their hometowns?
Well, they're certainly widely available around the Eugene campus because the university has worked very hard to make it so, as well as Lane County Public Health. Around the rest of the state, we have been working with corporate pharmacies to try to make sure that they stock it. You may be aware that in Oregon, pharmacists are authorized to vaccinate down to 11 years of age. Excuse me, so that would cover the college students. And we're very much interested in parents taking their University of Oregon students into the doctor or into the pharmacist to get the vaccine if they during spring break if they haven't gotten it on campus already. This is an opportunity for us to recruit the parents into our vaccination effort.
Is there a concern that you're going to have people traveling abroad potentially spreading the disease over there if they haven't been vaccinated?
I don't think spreading the disease is really the issue because, as I say, you know, a lot of people are out there walking around with it anyway. You know, it's going to be almost impossible to prevent the occasional spread of something. What I am worried about is that an unvaccinated student will go far from home and then come down with the illness because, you know, they were exposed before they left. And we definitely want University of Oregon students to be ready to tell any physician that they meet for an acute illness that that they came from the University of Oregon where there's been an outbreak of meningococcal disease.
And can the symptoms be mistaken for anything else? I mean, if somebody's coming down with the manifestations of meningococcal disease, does it look like something else at first?
Yeah, early on, the symptoms can be what we call nonspecific. You know, you can feel kind of achy, maybe a low-grade temperature. You might feel like you're getting the flu or something like that. And then, you know, over a day or two, they'll progress really rapidly if you're not treated. It's really hard to expect everybody who has nonspecific symptoms of achiness to go in and get a blood culture or get a spinal tap. But we do want, you know, students and parents and to recognize the symptoms that are really the hallmarks of meningococcal disease, a fever plus either a rash or a headache or a stiff neck. So a fever along with a severe headache, a stiff neck, or a rash. That should get you to the doctor pronto.
Okay. And then once treatments begin, I mean, how soon before somebody starts feeling better again?
Well, if the disease hasn't progressed too far, you know, and sometimes it does. I mean, you know, getting the rash is kind of late in the illness, and so you need to get antibiotics on board right away. But if it hasn't progressed too far, really, just getting the antibiotics started is quite effective. The organism is killed readily by some of our favorite antibiotics. And so that's not the issue. The issue is how far has it gone before you got the antibiotics on board.
So, Paul, just a couple seconds left. Is it a good thing that the students are on spring break this week?
Well, I think so. I think it presents a great opportunity because, you know, I think when we were college students, we were all kind of carefree and invincible. And maybe their parents will have a little more perspective and say, look, this is serious. You really need to get yourself into the pharmacy or to the doctor to get the vaccine. So I'm hopeful.
All right. The vaccine against meningococcal disease. Dr. Paul Cieslak is the Medical Director of Infectious Diseases and Immunization Programs at the Oregon Health Authority. Thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
You're quite welcome.
All right. Take care.